Jos Merlin was away from home for nearly a week, and during that time Mary came to know something of the country. The moors were even wilder than she had at first supposed. It was a silent, desolate country. On the high tors, the slabs of stone leant against one another in strange shapes and forms, massive sentinels who had stood there since the hands of God first fashioned them. Towards the end of the week, as she crossed the yard, she noticed with sinking heart that the stable door was open, the pony inside. Her uncle had returned. He was, it seemed, in high good humour.
"Well," he roared, "aren't you pleased to see me? You miss me much."
Mary made an effort to smile, and as she turned to go upstairs to her room, Jos called to tell her that it was Saturday night, and there would be company at Jamaica Inn. They came singly and furtively, the people of the moors, crossing the yard swiftly and silently, as though they had no wish to be seen. They seemed no more than shadows as they skirted the wall and passed under the shelter of the porch to knock upon the door of the bar and gain admittance. The light streamed from the windows, usually so shuttered and barred, and as the hours went by, the sound of voices rose upon the air. There was shouting, singing, ribald songs led in the main part by Harry the Peddler, showing that those visitors had lost their fear when under cover of the house. Securely separated by the counter and half screened by a barrier of bottles and glasses, Mary could look down upon the company and remain unobserved. The men were dirty, for the most part. Tramps, vagrants, poachers, thieves, cattle stealers, and gypsies. The evening seemed interminable. The air was so thick with smoke that it was hard to see across the room, and to Mary's weary, half-closed eyes, the faces of the men loomed shapeless and distorted. When she could bear it no longer, she touched her uncle on the shoulder, and he turned to her, his face blotched with the heat of the room and streaming with perspiration. She was surprised to see that although he had been drinking, he was sober.
"Think yourself a little bit too good for us?"
He pinched her cheek between his finger and thumb, hurting her. It was close on midnight, and he told her to lock her door and pull down the blind. He lowered his voice and seized her wrist, doubling it behind her back until she cried out in pain.
"You're not a fool like your aunt. You've got a clever little monkey mind, and you're not easily scared. I tell you this, Mary Ellen, it don't do to be curious at Jamaica Inn. I have you remember that. I'll break that mind of yours if you let it go astray. And I'll break your body too."
He turned away from her, but the contempt in her eyes must have irritated him, for his good humour had left him in a flash. Mary did as her uncle had told her. She pulled the blanket over her head, her only thought to be deaf to the horror and the revelry below. She slept. Then she heard a heavy, dragging sound, and she was awake suddenly. Something was being taken along the passage to the room at the end, the room with the barred windows and the bolted door. She got out of bed and went to the window, pulling aside an inch of blind. She saw five wagons lined up in the yard outside. Gathered round them were some of the men who had been drinking in the bar earlier in the evening. They worked quickly, against time. Those men who had shouted and sung earlier that night were now sober and silent, bent on the business in hand. As soon as the wagons were unloaded, they passed out into the night as swiftly and as silently as they had come. Then there was no one left in the yard but a man Mary had not seen before, Harry the Peddler, and her uncle. The clock in the hall rang the hour. 3 o'clock. She heard them go along the passage in the direction of the bar. Their footsteps died away, and a door slammed. Mary was too wide awake. What she had witnessed was smuggling on the grand scale. There was no doubt that Jamaica Inn was ideally situated for this purpose, and Mary could see that it must be easy enough for anyone with a capacity for organisation to work a team of wagons from the coast, with the inn itself as halting place and general store. And yet, had Jos Merlin the necessary brain and subtlety to lead such an enterprise? Did he plan every move and every departure? And had he been making preparations for tonight's work during the past week, when away from home? It must be so. Mary could see no alternative. If it were not for Aunt Patience, she would walk out of the inn now, find her way to the nearest town, and inform against Jos Merlin. Smuggling was dangerous. It was forbidden strictly by the law of the land. But had she seen only part of the game? Was there still more for her to learn? She remembered the terror in Aunt Patience's eyes, and those words spoken in the hush of that first afternoon. "There's things happen at Jamaica Inn. Bad things, evil things. I dare not even admit them to myself." Then Mary swore, a thing she had only done once before in her life, to give herself courage and a certain bold pretense. "I not show fear before Jos Merlin or any man," she said to herself as she dressed hurriedly, pulled on her stockings and crept into the passage. The hall was as black as a pit, and although she knew she stood alone there, the very solitude was threatening. As she hesitated, gathering courage to continue, a sudden beam of light shone into the passage, and she heard the murmur of voices. Mary was tempted to climb back up the stairs and seek safety in sleep, but there was a demon of curiosity within her, and so she crouched against the wall. Her hands and forehead were wet with perspiration, and she could hear nothing but the loud beating of her heart. The door was open, but she could not see or hear the men. Then suddenly a man's voice rang out, quavering and high, the voice of a stranger. "I tell you for the final time, I'll not be a party to it. That's murder you'd have me do, Mr. Merlin. There's no other name for it. It's common murder." Someone replied in a low tone, and Mary could not catch his words. His speech was broken by a cackle of coarse laughter that she recognised as belonging to the peddler. He must have hinted a question, for the stranger spoke again swiftly in self-defence. "Swinging, is it? I'm not afraid of my neck. No, I'm thinking of my conscience and of Almighty God. I'll face any man in a fair fight, but when it comes to the killing of innocent folk, women and children, that's going straight to hell, Jos Merlin, and you know it as well as I do." Someone thumped his fist on the table and swore, and her uncle lifted his voice for the first time. "You're soaked in this business up to your neck, and be damned to your blasted conscience. I told you there's no going back on it now. It's too late for you and for all of us. I've been doubtful of you from the first with your gentleman's airs and your clean cuffs, and by God, I proved myself right. Harry, bolt the door." There was a sudden scuffle and a cry. Once more the peddler laughed, odious and obscene, and he began to whistle. "Now look here, Mr. Lawyer Clark, or whatever you are," Jos continued. "You've made a fool of yourself tonight, but you're not going to make a fool of me. You'd like to walk out of that door and be away to Bodmin, and by 9 in the morning you'd have every magistrate in the country at Jamaica Inn. That's your fine idea, isn't it?" Mary could hear the stranger breathe heavily, as if in pain. "Do your devil's work if you must. I give you my word I'll not inform against you, but join you I will not. And there's my last word to you both." There was a silence, and then Jos Merlin spoke again. "Have a care. I heard another man say that once, and 5 minutes later he was treading the air on the end of a rope." Outside in the passage, Mary felt her neck and her forehead go clammy with sweat, and she realised that she was going to faint. Her uncle's voice came from very far away. "Leave me alone with him, Harry. There'll be no more work for you tonight. Take his horse and cast him loose the other side of Camelford. I'll settle this business by myself." Somehow Mary found her way to the parlour and crumpled in a heap on the floor. She must have fainted, but in a moment she came to and wondered whether it would be possible for her to go and get help. Mary was about to step out into the hall when a sound from above made her pause. It was the creaking of a board. There was silence for a minute, and then it happened again. Quiet footsteps pacing gently overhead. Aunt Patience slept at the other end of the house. Someone was in the empty guest room on the floor above. Whoever was in hiding must have heard her every movement. Therefore he must wish to remain concealed. He must have hidden there so that he should remain unseen by the smugglers. Someone, an ally perhaps, could help her save the stranger in the bar. She was about to mount the stairs when the beam of light shone forth once more from the back passage. The landlord climbed the stairs to the landing above. His footsteps came to a halt outside the guest room, and for a second or two he waited, as though he too listened for some alien sound. Then he tapped twice, very softly, on the door. Mary's heart sank within her, and her first despair returned. This could be no enemy to her uncle, after all. He had known him to be there all the time. She thanked God, then, that she had not climbed the stairs and knocked on the door. They came down the stairs together and stopped outside the parlour door, so close that she could have touched her uncle through the crack of the door. As it was, his voice whispered against her ear.
"As for you to say, it's your judgment now, not mine. I'll do it, or we'll do it between us. As for you to say the word."
Then they turned back along the hall and down to the bar beyond. She must have stood for 10 minutes or more waiting for some sound or signal, but everything was still. Once she fancied she heard a cry, but it was gone and lost in an instant. Then Mary went out into the hall. No crack of light came under the door to the bar. There was not even the murmur of a voice. Mary lifted the latch and stepped into the room. The door leading to the yard was open, and the room was filled with a fresh November air. The men had gone. A last little ray of moonlight made a white circle on the floor, and into the circle moved a dark blob like a finger. It was the reflection of a shadow. Mary looked up to the ceiling and saw that a rope had been slung through a hook in the beam. It was the rope's end that made the blob in the white circle, and it kept moving, backwards and forwards, blown by the draught from the open door.